All right, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Jackie, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. And Josh is going to introduce our speaker tonight.
Josh Allen, I'm an alcoholic. It gives me great pleasure to introduce my sponsor, Chris Wirt. And Chris was the first guy I ever met. He's not the only one, but he's the first guy I ever met that was happy. Take it away, Chris.
Thank you. My name is Chris Wirt, grateful recovered alcoholic. All right. I'm glad to be here. What an honor it is to stand up in front of this many drunks, tell my story. That's awesome. I did my due diligence. I always say this, but I was brought up right in AA. I wore my jacket and tie, and now I'm going to take it off. I'm done. So.
Telling you, I got to get comfortable when I speak.
Now I can breathe. House cleaning. My sobriety date is August 13, 2006. I like it too. I like it. I do have a home group. It's the Fifth Tradition group of Alcoholics Anonymous. In my opinion, the best AA group I've ever seen. I joined that home group when it was small. And if you've ever been to the group now, it's no longer small. And I've seen the reason for that is, you know, we hear in AA a lot, you know, attraction rather than promotion, right? What the hell does that mean? I didn't have the slightest idea what that meant for years. And probably the first 3 years I was sober, I was starting to get an idea of what that meant. And when I walked into the rooms of Fifth Tradition, I saw what it meant. Attraction rather than promotion. I walked in that room and I went, wow, what's going on here? This is like kind of like AA like I thought it was supposed to be. It was fantastic. It really was. And I saw people like Robert Bell, who I'd seen for years coming here in and out of NABA. This guy right here, I would come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous unconvinced that I was an alcoholic. Now, as the years went by, I started getting a sneaky suspicion that I just might be. But I'm like, oh, hell no. I would come here and I would hear Robert Bell share. And he would always seem to say something. I went, oh, God. I think that might be me. There was one time Robert shared something in here, and this is a God honest truth. I was sitting somewhere in the back, of course. Always in the back. If that curtain was pulled back, I was behind the fucking curtain. He said something that hit so close to home. I got up out of my chair and pretended to go to the bathroom. I had to leave. Straight to the liquor store. Straight there. I was 26 years old, right? Nine years short of getting sober. I was an alcoholic. It hit so close to home, it hurt. I could feel it inside me go, oh, God. And I had to leave. And see, what I now know, what I didn't know then, and I know it now, it's pretty cool to get sober, and now you know things that you didn't know, is that alcoholism was winning. You know, what is alcoholism? You know, the book gives a fantastic description of what alcoholism is. But I don't really know what it is. But the thing is, 7 years and some change sober now, I know I got it. I don't really know what it is. And I guess the longer I stay sober, the less I give a shit what it is. The more I'm becoming convinced that I have it. And that this simple spiritual program of action is a simple and 100% guaranteed, proven, effective treatment for alcoholism. How cool is that? If you're anything like me, you know, you might hear me say this word a couple of times because I say it a lot. Let me go ahead and take care of this first. Amen. Now for me, in the most basic sense of the word, that's what I'm saying. You know, over the centuries, that word has taken on such a religious connotation. You know, it just means like, and you know, I'm an educated brand alcoholic, right? Too smart for my own good for many years. Anybody else in here been too smart for their own good? Right? Brave souls. Yes. Back in the Aramaic language and the early Greek, what amen really meant was as it should be, or that's just the way it is. That's what the translation meant, you know, and that's the way I use it. So when you hear me say that, know that's what I mean. Okay? Because I know people coming in here to Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'd have heard somebody say amen from the podium, oh, God. There's a little switch inside my head that goes, I would have turned that person off. I would have not been able to hear a word they said the rest of the time. Alcoholism would have won. This is what would have been going on inside my head. I don't belong here. I'm not like these people. I can't believe he said amen from the podium. I know this is a religious cult. These fucking people fool me. I know it. I walk in here. They pass the basket. They pray. It's church. And my mom raised me right. I sit in my chair. I listen to you idiots talk. And when you're done, thanks for sharing, Jimmy. You're the best. And as soon as your little freak dog meeting's over with, I stand up with you and hold your hands and get in a circle and do your little sober dance and keep coming back. What? I snapped on a guy one time in a meeting. He told me, he said, hey, buddy, keep coming back. And he gave me the double guns, right? Keep coming. I looked at him, I said, keep coming back. Where? Here? You got to be kidding me, pal. And I looked at him, I said, is that all you got? Is that all you got? And I came out of what I call a spiritual blackout. I went, oh, what'd I just do? Oh, no, I didn't really act that way, did I? Oh, damn. And see, alcoholism won. And this is what alcoholism told me. See, you'll never get better. You just need to go ahead and leave now. You can never come back here again. Sorry, buddy. And I leave. And if you're anything like me, I think you have a good idea where I go when I leave. I heard a guy tell a story one time. You know, 90% of this stuff that I say up here from the podium, I stole from somebody else. There's no original information in AA. You know, there's not. Clancy, I love Clancy Emerson. Everybody know Clancy I? Probably everybody doesn't. If you don't, you ought to find out who he is. That old crotchety SOB, I listened to him for years and I hated him. That old man, he don't know me. He don't know who I am, blah. Yes, he does. And he says this, and it was a talk from Jekyll Island, actually, as a matter of fact, in 1994. And he was talking about it, and he goes, people, there's no new information in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I haven't heard a new thing in these rooms since 1969. And that had been 25 years at that point, right? And he goes, it's in the application. You just got to do it. And I came in these rooms for 13 years, and I studied Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew this. I know this book. I still know it. And one of the cool things is I know this book less well now than I did 5 years before I got sober. I could quote the book to you. See, I'm sitting in meetings because I hear stuff like meeting makers make it. Maybe. Maybe. This is my experience. I had to make it first, and now I've become a meeting maker. I make meetings because I made it. I spent years trying to come in these doors. If I can just come to enough of your skippy dog meetings, 90 and 90, you betcha, brother. I'm going to do 180 and 90. I'm going to be twice as sober as everybody else. I'm going to read this here book. Right there, that's French. That's whiskey in your milk. Page 44. Going out of my mind in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to public school like the next guy, right? I can learn your song and dance real fast. Real fast. I can learn what to say, how to say it, when to say it, and I can size you up real fast and figure out how I need to say it to you, baby. So I can keep you away from me. Hey, Chris, how you doing, buddy? Oh, shit. Time to put on the dance. One day at a time. Meeting maker, make it. Yes, sir. Delusion of the mind. I'm an outright mental defective. Yes, sir. Only a spiritual experience will conquer what I have. I'm doing great. And the whole time, I'm coming apart at the fucking seams on the inside. I can't stand you. But I'm going to put on the... Yes, I'm doing fantastic. And I'm full of shit. You know, I don't know what alcoholism is. I know I got it. And I think alcoholism might be... I'm full of shit. And I can't help but to be full of shit. I don't know any other way to live other than being full of shit. See, some people understand, I think. I hear some people laughing. You know? And I used to say, thank God for competent sponsorship, right? And I'm going to get to that. I used to say that I wasted a lot of years in Alcoholics Anonymous before I got sober. I was wrong. You know, my first sponsor looked at me, he said, you did what? I said, I wasted 13 years in Alcoholics Anonymous because I wasn't ready. And he went, really? And I was like, yeah. He said, where did you learn the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, in your meetings. I told you I came here for 13 years. He said, oh, that's good. So you know the book. I said, oh, yeah. By the way, I speak like four languages. I can read this book in English, Spanish. I can fumble through it in Portuguese and Italian. So what? I was full of shit. See, I came to AA for 13 years learning what not to do to get sober. I didn't waste my time. Could it have been better spent? You betcha. Did I waste it? Absolutely not. I don't believe in God's world there's any such thing as wasted time. Did that just come out of my mouth? I think it did, didn't it? It's funny, if you get sober, things start coming out of your mouth and you're like, did I just say that? You know, I used to come to AA for years and I would hear people say all these little corn dog cliches that we have, you know. And I would think, I'm never going to be that guy. Oh my God, I'm that fucking guy. I'm the guy going, hey man, where's Jen? Jen works for me. I have a company now, a cleaning company that my stepmother and I ran successfully for 4 or 5 years, and I've resurrected it now in the last few months, and I have two alcoholic women that work for me. Holy shit, you talk about an interesting fucking day. One of them's got 10 years and thinks she knows it all. And the other one's got 44 days and thinks she knows it all. It's awesome. And I have 7 3/4 years and I think I know it all. You put those three people together and it's a cluster, you know what, right? And but I was talking to Jen before the meeting and she was telling me about this situation she has with her roommate. And she looked at me and she goes, we're going to have it out tonight. And I said, you are? She was like, uh-huh. She was chomping at the bit to go after this woman, right? And I was like, oh my God, I know that. And what did I tell Jen? What did I tell you, Jen? I said, hey, what does it say on page 87? What do we do when we're agitated? I said, we pause when agitated and ask God for the right thought or action. I went, oh, I'm that guy. Amen. You know, that guy, it hasn't made sense for me. Here's another one I hear a lot. It hasn't made sense for me to take a drink in such and such amount of time. Well, that's fantastic. It really is, right? But I drank even when it didn't make sense. And the miracle for me is, since August 13, 2006, it really hasn't made sense for me to take a drink. But more importantly, I have not been able to justify taking another drink, even when it didn't make sense. Amen. What is that, number three now? Let me write that down. That's the third amen. It just is. And for a guy like me, that's a miracle. And you know, at the Clarkston Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a podium. And where's my friend Gary? Hi, Gary. Gary spoke at our home group Saturday night. And he mentioned that too. And on the front of the podium at Clarkston, it says, expect a miracle. You better, if you're anything like me, you had better expect a miracle. For the real alcoholic, which is described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not just a hard drinker. There's lots of people who drink way too much. And they get in way too much trouble drinking. And they go to detox centers. And they go to rehabs. They're not like me. Eventually life gets so bad that they do what? They stop. Not me. I don't have that ability to stop. It requires a miracle for an alcoholic of my variety to not drink. And if you're sitting out here tonight and that sounds like some horse you know what to you, it did to me too. It's my experience. I was in this room one time. And by the way, I really am glad to be here. I talked all kinds of shit about NABA for years. I talked it about AA, period. It wasn't just NABA, right? But I learned some fantastic things here. I've met some great people here. And I learned a lot of what not to do in Alcoholics Anonymous right here. I was in a meeting one time, and there was a young person in the meeting. I was, I don't know, maybe less than a year sober. And there was an older gentleman who shared something in the meeting. I don't even remember what it was, but it was quite eloquent and quite profound. Because I went, ooh. And I saw a bunch of other people go, ooh. And I happened to see this young man, probably 20. And I looked at him sitting in his seat, and he was squirming in that seat, sweating. I could see it. I was like, that guy's coming apart at the seams on the inside. And I saw him go, huh. Yeah, it was that profound, right? So, after the meeting, I see that young man. He goes and makes a beeline for that older guy. And I'm standing close enough that I'm not in the conversation, but I can hear, right? And the young man walks over to me and says, excuse me, sir. And the guy said, yeah, I don't remember who these people are anymore. And he said, could I ask you a question? And I'm listening. And he says, sir, could you please describe for me how you quit drinking? And I thought it strange that he used the word describe. Not a word you would normally use, right? I thought, huh. And the gentleman looked at him and he goes, nope. Yeah, I was just like Isla. I was like, that's the wrong answer. You know, and I'm 9 months sober, and I'm Mr. AA. I'm wearing my AA cape, right? I'm ready to fly in and save the day. You know, da, da, da! I got you, newcomer! Come on! I'm going to pull a John Shires on him and get him in a headlock and start giving him a noogie. You're going to get sober whether you want to or not. You know? I paused when agitated. Amen. The gentleman went, nope. And the kid went, and he goes, son, for an alcoholic of my variety, it requires a miracle to not drink. And I'm listening to this, and he goes, by definition, miracles are indescribable. And he goes, but I'd be honored to show you what I did. That's AA right there. That's it. I'll never forget that. I will never, ever forget that. I went, that's how it's done right there. And that old man, probably 60 years old, and the 20-year-old went off in the Al-Anon room over here. And I knew that young man for probably another year. I saw him around. And as far as I knew, he never took another drink. So Alcoholics Anonymous is the place for miracles. And I don't know why I was going there. I love going off on tangents. And I forget where the hell I started from, right? Well, I guess I need to do a little bit about my drinking, right? I drank, and I drank a lot. And I did drugs, and I did drugs a lot. I'm an equal opportunity alcoholic, right? Okay, let's go ahead and get this out of the way. I have two drugs of no choice. I used to come to A&I and I'd hear people say, "What's your drug of choice, Skippy?" I have two drugs of no choice. My drug of choice implies that I have the power of choice to do it or not. I have drugs of no choice. And those two are, the first one is more. Anybody know that? Anybody have that one? Aw, no hands. I see what's up. There you go. I got two hands in the back. Hands, brave souls. And my second drug of no choice is yours. Because I'm going to do all of mine and whatever I have to do all of yours too. I got some people in the house with me.
Amen.
I already converted one guy. I heard a guy tell a joke when he said when he tells his story, he always tries to break even. And I was like, he goes, "If I can save as many of them that drink, I broke even, baby." And the joke was that he has the power to do neither. Right? I thought it was cute. Did I just say cute? I did. Okay. And, you know, just to finish all this thing, I'm a firm believer in singleness of purpose. I promise you that. That we are here tonight. I am here tonight. I don't really know why all of y'all are here. I got a good idea why most people are here. I know why I'm here. And that singleness of purpose is recovery from alcoholism. No more, no less. Alcoholics Anonymous does no more than that. And it does no less than that. That's all it does. Amen. Because I used to come into Alcoholics Anonymous looking for a job. I used to come into Alcoholics Anonymous looking for a girlfriend. I used to come into Alcoholics Anonymous looking for all kinds of stuff. I thank God every day that all Alcoholics Anonymous does is recovery from alcoholism. And but there's my sister, what a fantastic lady. She is a hybrid recovery person, I call her. She does AA and NA. She got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, works the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous speaks to her also. See, the program of recovery is the same in any fellowship. What's different is the fellowship. That idea of identification is vital. It's absolutely vital. If you cannot become convinced that you have what I have, I can't help you. And so my sister got sober through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she does a lot of her fellowship through Narcotics Anonymous, but she takes her girls through the steps AA style. Because she tells them, she says, "This is where God found me. This is how I made my approach to God, whatever God is." You know, I don't know. What is alcoholism? I don't know. I know I got it. What is God? I don't know. I know I got it. All right? So my sister, she's gone on one of her terrible runs. Terrible, terrible runs. And I can laugh about now. She wasn't laughing then, right? Nor was I. And we're sitting on the couch, and I'm about a year and a half sober. And she's looking at me four or five times. Like, you know, when somebody looks at you and they want to tell you something so bad, but they just can't. And you can feel it. She's looking at me. I finally said, "Lori, what?" She goes, will you take me to one of those fucking meetings? I was like, absolutely. So I got up off the couch. She said, where are you going? I said, I thought we were going to a meeting. She said, now? I said, yeah, now. So we went to the Gwinnett room out there. And so I took her to her first meeting. I took her to her first rehab. And I took her to her first halfway house. And she's been sober ever since. 5.5 years sober now. What a miracle, Alcoholics Anonymous says. And my dad, black belt in Al-Anon. My sister and I drove him there hard, baby. And he's grateful for that. He comes on Sunday nights to the Al-Anon meeting here. He's got about 3 or 4 he goes to a week. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm grateful. But I really am. One time I came in off one of my runs. And I don't know about y'all, but I don't drink a little bit. I drink a lot. I have this thing called an allergy of the body. That's what the big book calls it. Is it really an allergy? I don't know. I know I got it. I know that when I start to drink, all bets are off. My best advice for you, if you see me with a drink or a drug in my hand, my best advice for you is to run for your life. Because I'm coming after you. I am. I'm coming. I'm going to take everything I think I can take from you. And I'm not really going to care how I take it. I'm going to take whatever desperate measure I need to take it. And I'm going to throw you in the ditch. And I'm going to the next person. That's what alcohol does to me. It robs me of any decency. It robs me of any pride, any self-respect. I will do whatever I have to do to get another drink. And I've done shameful, terrible things to get another drink. And, so now for the better part of 8 years, that allergy has not been triggered. I have not triggered that allergy in nearly 8 years. And the reason that is because the other part of alcoholism, if all I had was an abnormal reaction to alcohol, if all I had was an allergy to alcohol, there is a simple, 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 simple solution to that. Just don't take the first one. And I used to come to Alcoholics Anonymous for years, and guess what I heard in AA? Just don't take the first drink. You won't get drunk. Really, pal? Is that all you got? Is that all you got? Because I'm sitting in this room and I'm coming apart at the seams and I'm convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm going to take another drink. No matter what. I hear that in AA all the time. Just don't drink, no matter what. I was in an AA meeting one time. I kid you not. They had the room separated in halves. One half of the room went, just don't drink. And the other half, no matter what, just don't drink, no matter what. Oh, my God. I said, these people are nuts. I'm not like these people. You know, and one guy told me one time, he said, hey, man, just join the just don't drink no matter what club. I kid you not. And you know, I couldn't join that club. I was already the member of another club. I was in the just drink no matter what club. I can't be in two clubs at once. Where did I get off on that? I did. I've completely forgotten where I went with that. The obsession to drink. I have what the big book calls an obsession of the mind. And, you know, I came to AA for years, and I really didn't know what that meant. You know, I'd tell you about it, though. If you asked me, I'd be like, oh, obsession of the mind, absolutely. Strange mental blank spots. Peculiar mental twist. Drink when I don't want to drink. Drink when I have no better reason to drink. Drink when I know it's going to hurt me. I drink anyway. Yeah. I was that fucking guy. I had no idea what was going on in my mind and in my heart and in my soul. No idea. But I'm not going to let you know that. I'm not going to let you know that. There are probably these three words right here were maybe the biggest barrier to me ever getting sober. They could not come out of my mouth. They would not come out of my mouth. And they did not come out of my mouth. I go to my grave before I'll say these three words. And they're, I don't know. No, sir. I will tell a lie. I will concoct the biggest story. I have to. I cannot let you know that I don't know something. And I had no idea for 13 years in Alcoholics Anonymous why I was going to drink again. Why I was going to drink against my own will. I was baffled. You know, we hear in the readings, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Yep. I didn't believe that for years. And I have an obsession of the mind. And all that means is, in its most simplest terms, is that an obsession is one thought that overrides all other thoughts. That's all it is. You know, all human beings have obsessive minds to some degree. Right? Well, mine's real obsessive. You know, the Big Book talks about alcoholics being people of extremes. We are extreme examples of self-will run riot. We are extreme examples of humanity. I'm an extreme example of humanity. I have an obsession of the mind that won't stop. And that includes alcohol. And when I think of alcohol, if I'm not sober, when the thought of alcohol comes into my mind, not if it does, when it does, and I'm going to use some language here again because I'm fucked. When that thought of drinking comes, I'm doomed. Because the obsession kicks in and I can't not drink. I can put up the biggest battle in the world and I lose every single time. I didn't know that. Thank God for competent sponsorship. A sponsor told me that's what it was. And I just didn't know. I just didn't know. What else was it? Oh, craptastic. Craptastic, I love that word. I say it all. Try not to. On August 12th, 2006, I was unable to get sober. I was unwilling and or unable to get sober. And it was both at the same time. And I had become convinced that my life, as I had known it up to that point, was over. My best plans get me where? Come on, somebody knows. Here! And I gotta keep coming back where? Here? Oh, Jesus. Think about that. That's a dark day for a guy like me, who's full of pride, who's full of ego, who can't admit he doesn't know, and will never admit that he's wrong. Never. On August 13, 2006, I did all those things. All of a sudden, I was able to do what I was unable to do before. What's the difference between August 13, 2006 and August 12, 2006? I have no idea. But the difference is incredible. It's night and day different. On August 12, 2006, I need a drink of this. I became convinced what my sponsor called step zero. He told me there are 12 steps in recovery. And he said, but if you're a real alcoholic, there's 13 steps of life. And I looked at him like, I know what that 13th step is. What the hell is he talking about over here? He goes, it's not the one you're thinking of, pal. I was like, okay. Step zero has to precede, for me, step zero had to precede step one. Step zero being convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I knew that for a good handful of years before I got sober. I was not convinced of it. When I became convinced that without, here we go, without God's help, I had to have God's help. Holy shit. Put up your tray tables, baby. We're coming in for a landing. Oh my God. See, because I came to AA for a long time, and I could hang with you people up until page 62. Page 62 says, we had to have God's help. I got to go. Because I would look around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and after 13 years of coming in this place, and 13 years of continued failure in life, and 13 years of drinking my face off, and 13 years of drugging myself into oblivion, I had become convinced that I drank like you people. But I wasn't like you people. Because I don't have to have God's help. I would think, might be nice. Might even help me a little bit. And probably be a nice adjunct to my already existing life. But I don't have to have it. And AA people, they have to have God's help. Or else. Not me. You know, I really appreciate y'all's really genuine, sincere desire to help me. But I'm not like you. I'm going to go ahead and go now. And I leave. And y'all know where I go when I leave. So, this is kind of funny. Some of y'all may have heard these. If you've heard these, bear with me. If you haven't. I became convinced on August 12, 2006, that my whole life I had been working a 12-step program. It just wasn't the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was these 12 steps. And see if some of these might sound familiar to you. Step number one. We admitted we were powerless over nothing. That we could manage our lives perfectly, and of anyone else who would allow us. Nobody's ever worked that one before? I see a hand. See a hand. Step two. Came to believe there was no power greater than ourselves, and the rest of the world was insane. I was going to say, is it just me up here in the podium? Is this thing working? What the fuck? Okay, number three. Made a decision to have our loved ones and friends turn their wills and lives over to our care, even though they couldn't understand us at all. Hands. I see some hands. Two hands in the back. I'm like a preacher now. Two hands in the back. Somebody's been to church. Okay. Number four. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of everyone we knew. Let that one sink in a bit there. Okay. Number five. Admitted to the world at large the exact nature of everyone else's wrongs. Good, I mean, my people. Number six, we're entirely ready to make others straighten up or ship out. I like it. Let me write that down. All right. Who's ever heard this expression, my way or the highway? That was my favorite. I loved that one. And you know what? Eventually I looked out around the world one day and guess where everybody had gone? The highway, baby! What? I know loneliness such as few do. We have some people that know our big book in here. Okay. Number seven. Demanded others to either shape up or ship out. Eight. Made a list of all persons who had harmed us. And became willing to go to any lengths to get even with them all.
Hands in the back. Okay.
Number nine. Got direct revenge on such people wherever possible.
Hey, can you save your laugh until the end?
Thanks. Got direct revenge on such people wherever possible, except when to do so would cost us our very lives, or at the very least a jail sentence. 10. continued to take the inventory of others, and when they were wrong, promptly and repeatedly told them about it. This guy's had his hand up for every single one back here. You're sick. All right, where am I? Number 11. Sought through bitching and nagging to improve our relations with others, as we couldn't understand them at all, asking only that they knuckle under and do it our way. That's my favorite one. And number 12. He's already got his hand up. Number 12. Having had a complete physical, emotional, and spiritual breakdown as the result of these steps, we tried to blame it on others and to get sympathy and pity in all our affairs. Oh, God. That really, though. For real, though, that's funny and all, you know, but God, that was me. That was me. I thank God every day, like I said. Holy cow. For competent sponsorship. I got to get sober, don't I? Good Lord. I went to jail. Let's cut right to the chase. I went to jail. I was in a halfway house. Okay? Low bottom, terrible, nasty, just... ugh. I'm a college-educated person. I speak multiple languages. What am I doing in this shithole? Well, after about 2 months of being in that place, guess what? I'm better. I'm better now. You know, I don't really need you guys anymore. You know, I really, man, you know, you guys have been the best. When I needed you, you guys were here. But I'm going to get on down the road now. All right? So, long story short, I left that halfway house. And needless to say, 3 weeks later, I ended up in Gwinnett County Jail. Because I had a job making $1,000 a week. Right? I managed a Quick Trip. I was the night manager at Quick Trip, the one at Steve Reynolds and Beaver Ruin Road. Pays well. You know, because on paper, I still look good, baby. I could knock your socks off in an interview, too. But on the inside, I'm fucking empty. I'm empty. And that job lasted 3 weeks. And here's why. I just want to let you know, in case anybody out there is interested in getting a job at Quick Trip, they do not condone smoking crack behind the dumpster when you're on the clock.
They do not.
Anywho, I end up in Gwinnett County Jail. And Gary Neidhart, and a gentleman named Bill Roop. Some of you on here know Bill. When I entered into Gwinnett County Jail, I got no time. Over the years in my life, I had a really long list of stuff that made me different or better than you. Or you, or you, or you. Now, as time went, I have alcoholism, let's not forget that. As time went on, I started doing those things that made me better or different than you. And on August 1st, I guess, or so of 2006, the only thing I had left on my list is that I had never been to jail. I hung on to that with dear life. It was my last hope that I wasn't like you. I drank like you, but I'm not like you. Well, where was I? In jail. At that point, I lost all hope. I became what the Big Book describes as a hopeless alcoholic. What kind of life is a life without hope? It's not worth living at all. I was convinced when I left Gwinnett County Jail, I was going to make my way up to the top of that jail, and I was going to take a nosedive off the top of that building. That's all there was to it. It wasn't a bunch of boo-hoo bullshit. It's a cry for help.
It wasn't none of that. I'm not making fun of that.
I'm so sorry I did that. This was just a real solemn decision.
I looked around and I went, there's no hope for me. I'll never get better. Oh my God, I think I'm an alcoholic. I have a chronic, fatal, and progressive disease that has no known cure. Oh my God. All I know is that I drink no matter what. I drink against my own will. I drink against my better judgment. And I'm going to continue to do that the rest of my living days. And worse yet, everybody that loved me or cared for me was going down with me. Yep, I think the best thing for me and everybody involved is just to go ahead and take me out of the picture. Dad will be better, Mom will be better, my nieces will be better, my friends will be better, society as a whole will be in less danger. Yep, that's what I'm going to do.
So, I'm at jail, and I keep hearing these announcements for the AA meetings.
I ain't going there. AA doesn't work. I'm going to kill myself anyway, so why go?
And I heard a voice in my head, and I know, oh God, I'm hearing voices. I'd sit here and people tell their stories and go, oh God, he's not hearing voices again, is he? I did. They kept saying, go to the meeting. And I got so sick of hearing that in my head that I just went to the meeting in hopes it would shut up. So I could commit suicide in peace, damn it. I just want to kill myself in peace. God had other plans. So I dragged my butt up to the AA meeting. There's maybe about 40 of us in there. And I looked, there's like three layers of glass doors and walls before. And I see this man right here in Bill Roop. If anybody knows Bill, Bill was about 84 then, I guess, 83.
Bill's a little hunched over. He walks kind of slow like that. You know, and I looked and I went, oh, there's that guy. Oh, and there's that old guy.
Oh. Bill Roop. This is how I describe Bill Roop. This man was so comfortable in his own skin, it was eerie.
I would look at him and go, oh, God, how do you get that?
So they come in the room, and Gary goes straight to the table. He's setting up the table. And he hadn't said a word to anybody, I don't think, yet. And Bill hadn't said a word to anybody. And Bill has these little business cards. Right? And he was going... And in jail. Anybody here been in jail? Brave souls, raging. Yes! You got the little pockets in the jumpsuits, right? So Bill's going down the line to every single person and just sticking one of these little cards in your jumpsuit like this. So I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, what is he doing? That's that old guy that's so creepy. Sober. He's creepy sober. He's so sober that it's creepy. He sticks the card in my pocket. He goes on to the next guy. And when I think he's far enough away from me that I won't notice that he sees me pull it out, because I don't want him to see me pull it out, because that might mean I don't know something. And here's what it says. Relax. God's in charge. And an immeasurable amount. I went, oh my God, that's right. So small you can't measure it. But it was there, damn it. And 40 some days later, when I left Gwinnett County Jail, I walked out of Gwinnett County Jail and I looked up to the roof. No, God's in charge. That old man. Here's another cornball saying that I hated in AA. Well, we're just God with skin on. It's true. Bill Roop, God with skin on. And thank you too, Gary. God with skin on, brother. And got my sponsor, who knew how to handle an alcoholic and drug addict like me knew how to stand up to a violent and belligerent, verbally violent, belligerent, scared, desperate, hopeless, savage human being like me. Stood his ground. What's the big book say? Stay on the firing lines of life and God will keep you unharmed? Amen. This man stood his ground to me. And I was waiting for this man to fold like a cheap lawn chair. I was waiting for it. And he didn't. And I remember I looked at him and I went, okay, I'll do it. And we went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We did it fast. We did it rough. We did it hard. We did it basic. And we did it fast. I established a relationship with God and didn't even know I'd done it. Thank God for a man who knew how to take a guy like me, run me through the steps, stick his foot in my ass, go start helping people. And before I knew it, I was sober. So, you know, I don't know, being sure, because, you know, God dang, I ran over. There's two things you're supposed to do when you tell your story, right? One, you're supposed to tell the truth. And two, finish on time. But if you can't do both of those, at least finish on time, damn it. So, I guess with that, I don't have any more to say. I thank you so much for letting me come out here. This has been fantastic. Thank you. Woo!
Wow, thanks so much, Chris. Our friend Gary is going to give out the chips tonight.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much, Chris. All I can say is that Billy always used to say, you reap what you sow. And, you know, and with regards to the Gwinnett County Jail, you just never know when you're going to get back in this outfit. But when you do, it's really nice, and I want to thank you for that. But I also want to share that yesterday my wife and I went up to the Georgia National Cemetery. We spent a little time with Bill at his grave, along with his wife. And they're really a very, very special person. Died with 56 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, but as far as I'm concerned, he's right in the next room. If you want to give up the high price of low living, you'd like to surrender, which we have to do, we offer a white chip.
Child.